and the title of Amazons was bestowed on 10 martial heroines of the Gothic nation who had been taken in arms. But every eye, disregarding the crowd of captives, was fixed on the Emperor Tetricus and the Queen of the East. The former, as well as his son, whom he had created Augustus, was dressed in Gallic trousers, a saffron tunic, and a robe of purple. The beauteous figure of Zenobia was confined by fetters of gold. A slave supported the gold chain which encircled her neck, and she almost fainted under the intolerable weight of jewels. She proceeded on foot the magnificent chariot in which she once hoped to enter the gates of Rome. But however in the treatment of his unfortunate rivals, Aurelian might indulge his pride, he behaved towards them with a generous clemency which was seldom exercised by the ancient conquerors. Princes who, without success, had defended their throne of freedom, were frequently strangled in prison as soon as the triumphal pomp ascended the capital. These usurpers, whom their defeat had convicted of the crime of treason, were permitted to spend their lives in affluence and honourable repose. The emperor presented Zenobia with an elegant villa at Tibur, or Tivoli, about 20 miles from the capital. The Syrian queen insensibly sunk into a Roman matron. Her daughters married into noble families, and her race was not yet extinct in the 5th century. Tetricus and his son were reinstated in their rank and fortunes.
Although successful in his military ventures, Aurelian faced, as did so many of his predecessors, domestic strife in Rome. He too was the victim of a military assassination and died in AD 275.
Such was the unhappy condition of the Roman emperors, that whatever might be their conduct, their fate was commonly the same. A life of pleasure or virtue, of severity or mildness, of indolence or glory, alike led to an untimely grave, and almost every reign is closed by the same disgusting repetition of treason and murder. On the 25th of September, near 8 months after the murder of Aurelian, the consul convoked an assembly of the Senate and reported the doubtful and dangerous situation of the empire. He slightly insinuated that the precarious loyalty of the soldiers depended on the chance of every hour and of every accident. But he represented, with the most convincing eloquence, the various dangers that might attend any farther delay in the choice of an emperor. Intelligence, he said, was already received that the Germans had passed the Rhine and occupied some of the strongest and most opulent cities of Gaul. The ambition of the Persian king kept the East in perpetual alarms. Egypt, Africa, and Illyricum were exposed to foreign and domestic arms, and the levity of Syria would prefer even a female scepter to the sanctity of the Roman laws. The consul then, addressing himself to Tacitus, the first of the senators, required his opinion on the important subject of a proper candidate for the vacant throne. If we can prefer personal merit to accidental greatness, we shall esteem the birth of Tacitus more truly noble than that of kings. He claimed his descent from the philosophic historian whose writings will instruct the last generations of mankind. The senator Tacitus was then 75 years of age. The long period of his innocent life was adorned with wealth and honours. He arose to speak, when, from every quarter of the house, he was saluted with the names of Augustus and Emperor. Tacitus, Augustus, the gods preserve thee. We choose thee for our sovereign. To thy care we entrust the Republic and the world. Accept the empire from the authority of the Senate. It is due to thy rank, to thy conduct, to thy manners. As soon as the tumult of acclamation subsided, Tacitus attempted to decline the dangerous honour, and to express his wonder that they should elect his age and infirmities to succeed the martial vigour of Aurelian. Are these limbs conscripted?